This is the first part of the talk. In the second part of the talk, I will apply the idea of the technology of loop quantum gravity to study the behavior of black hole. Then, the program of the talk consists on two or two plus one parts. In the first part, I will introduce a technology to calculate correlations from the theory defined at the Planck scaling, at the Planck scale, and in particular, I will calculate the two-point and three-point function in loop quantum gravity in the Rege limit of loop quantum gravity. In the second part, and I will compare these results with the analogous objects that we can calculate in quantum perturbative field theory. In the second part, I will apply the ideas of loop quantum gravity to a mini-superspace model, and in particular to the Kantosky-Sachs mini-superspace model that describes the space-time inside the event horizon of the black hole. I analyze the problem at the quantum level, and I will show that the singularity disappears in this simplified model. And then I will study the semi-classical. I will study the problem semi-classically, and I will extract some physical quantities as the temperature, entropy, and I will obtain the evaporation process for the black hole. So let me start with. First of all. There are many approaches to obtain the semi-classical limit from the theory defined at the Planck scale, and I recall here some approach to obtain this limit, but I have a conservative approach, and I want to define the endpoints function using the objects that we have in loop quantum gravity. Then I introduce the technology step by step. First of all, I recall that the endpoint function in quantum field theory is given by the Feynman-Patti integral. And if you consider a different invariant theory, you have a problem. In fact, this object is independent from the point xi, xn, and it is a constant. So, first of all, I rewrite in an equivalent way this quantity, but considering the space-time divided in two regions, a compact region R and the region outside. So I can write these quantities in this equivalent way, where W of var phi and sigma is the dynamic inside the region R, and var phi is the value of the field on the boundary sigma. The other object that depends on sigma bar is the dynamic outside. And we define this object as a sort of boundary state for that summarizes all the space-time outside this region. If you want, also the Big Bang. This describes the physics on the boundary of our laboratory where we calculate the endpoint correlations. But this is an equivalent formula. So, in a diffeomorphism invariant theory, the amplitude is independent from the deformations of the surface sigma, and depend just of the boundary value of the gravitational field that I call here var phi. And so our proposal of correlation function is given in this relation where I replaced the amplitude outside the region R with a boundary state peaked over a geometry Q. And so our amplitude depends on the point xn, xi, xn, and on the geometry Q. And the points are defined in terms of the geometry Q, the geometry of the boundary sigma. Okay? So, how we can translate this object in loop quantum gravity? We have a spin network, and the dynamic is given by a spin form model. So, the integral over the boundary field is replaced by a sum over boundary spin network. And those objects are intersections of graviton in our calculations, and psi q is the boundary state that depends on the boundary spin network, and it is peaked over the geometry that we choose, and we will choose a flat geometry on the boundary. W of s is the boundary amplitude that we will calculate using that we take from the spin form formalism for to define the dynamic of loop quantum gravity. The amplitude for the endpoints function is given in this relation. I have here dynamic W of S, and to calculate this object, we must define three quantities: the dynamic, the operator H that represents the graviton for our, and the boundary state psi of Q. So the dynamics is given by a spinform model, and we consider in the this two complex with just one vertex in our spinform model, and in red is represented the boundary spin network. If you want, it is the dual of a fourth simplex, and we can think a fourth simplex as a drastic simplification of an S3 sphere. So our boundary is our three-dimensional boundary is a trisphere in this in the field theory equivalent amplitude. So we calculate some components of the graviton operator, the graviton propagator, and the graviton three-point endpoints function. The graviton is defined as a fluctuation over the flat metric, and this is our definition in terms of the density triad of loop quantum gravity. The diagonal terms of the graviton are simply proportional to the Casimir operator for the representation over the link on the boundary spin network. So the picture is the following. We have a boundary spin network with nodes. We localize the gravitons in the nodes of the spin network. This means that the graviton is localized in the dual decomposition of the space-time, of the spatial section, sorry. The graviton is localized inside a tetrahedra. What is the boundary state? The boundary state is a Gaussian state peaked over the boundary geometry. And the boundary geometry is defined by the representation J0, and the conjugate, the variable conjugate to the representation J of the spin network are the dihedral angles, and so this state is peaked on the metric and also on the extrinsic curvature of the three-dimensional surface. The state is semi-classical in the sense that the indetermination, the relative indetermination for the representation or for the area, and also the indetermination for the angle go to zero in the Regge limit or for large J representation. So we have all the ingredients to obtain the graviton propagator, and the first one is the amplitude, and we obtain this relation where the spin form model at the first order gives say that the amplitude WS is proportional to the 10J symbol for the Barrett-Crane model, and this is the boundary spin, the Gaussian boundary spin network. This is the same expression, but in terms of fluctuation of the representation J on the boundary. Then we must take we take the large J limit or the Regge limit of our amplitude, in particular of the 10J symbol, the Barrett-Crane symbol. And in this limit, it is proportional to the exponential of the Regge action plus the dominant term. If we expand in delta J fluctuation at the second order, and the second order, the Regge action, and we had insert those two ingredients in the amplitude, we obtain that the rapidly oscillating phase that depends on the extrinsic curvature in the boundary state simplified the analog terms that we have in the, at the fifth order in J in the Regge action developing. So, this rapidly oscillating term also killed the dominant term D. And the result is that the two-point function, or the diagonal part of the two-point function, is proportional to 1 over J, and when we introduce the length, it is proportional to 1 over L squared, and this is the correct scaling for the Newton law, or for the two-point function that we can obtain in perturbative quantum field theory for the gravitons. But general relativity contains also any other terms, and so to have a semi-classical limit, the complete Einstein-Hilbert action, we must study also the other three-level interaction terms for gravitons. And here there is an expansion in fluctuation of the metric of the Einstein-Hilbert action, and this is the expansion at all orders in terms of the fluctuation H. It is simple in our formalism to calculate the endpoints function, and it is sufficient to develop the Regge action at the n order in the fluctuation of the boundary representations. And the result is that the scaling that we obtain is 1 over L to 2n minus 2. If we do the same calculation in perturbative quantum gravity, and we take the trace part, we obtain exactly the same scaling of the endpoints function. F is a function of the angles on the boundary of the S3 sphere. Now, there is also a recent paper where we have calculated the 2 and 3 area correlation functions, connected correlation functions, and from one side, starting from the spinform model, and on the other side, without assume that we have the exponential of the Regge action in the large J limit, but doing the calculation independently in the spinform model approach and in the area Regge calculus. Then, it is the same quantities defined before, where the area operator is essentially the diagonal part of the graviton, and we use the stationary phase approximation to perturbatively in the fluctuation delta J and for large J zero representation. So we obtain in this limit using this approximation an action that in principle is not the Regge action, but is we have calculated these quantities until the third order in the delta J fluctuation. And we have obtained some results for the two that we know, and the result is the same that we obtained before for the graviton, and for the three-point area correlation. The first depends on the quadratic term K, the second depends on the cubic term I. Okay, this is from the spin form model approach without using the limit for large J of the Barrett-Cain model. We can repeat the same calculus in area Regge in the area Regge quantum calculus, and in this case, we develop the action in serie, and we obtain a quadratic here, also here, until the cubic fluctuation in the area fluctuation of the boundary. And we discover that we have a perfect accord between the two and the three amplitudes, the three correlations calculated in the Barrett-Crane model in the large J limit, and the same calculus doing in this is a three area correlation in area range calculus, where all the coefficients calculated here, k and I, the tensors k and I, are in the same calculated from spin foam mode. So we can say that the area correlation that we obtain from a spin foam model are the same that we can calculate in the higher range quantum calculus.
So
yes.
Just for one second. So this is very simple. It is the Hamilton function of there isn't dynamics at the higher range quantum calculus level. It is the boundary action. So what about the other components and the complete tensorial structure of general relativity? Okay, there is a recent paper where Rovelli and Alessi modified the large J limits of the Barrett-Crane model
and suppose to it is possible to obtain that limit from another fundamental dynamics. But this is a work in progress alternative to that approach. In fact, it is possible to define the metric for a fourth simplex in terms of the length of the fourth simplex. And so the graviton is the fluctuation of the metric, and it is expressed in terms of the fluctuation of the length of the fourth simplex. But there is a relation between an invertible relation between the fluctuation of the length and the fluctuation of the area. So in principle, I can choose this object delta g equal to this linear combination of area fluctuation and define this object as my graviton. If I do this, I must complete the calculation, but I can extract all the components of the graviton propagator and also all the components of the endpoints function that you can obtain in area range calculus if you take this as a graviton operator. It is not a natural choice because in loop quantum gravity you want to define the graviton operator in terms of the density triad, but it is another way to obtain the semi-classical limit. So I want to conclude this first part, and the results are that in the last 2-3 years we have introduced a formalism to calculate the amplitudes, the endpoints function amplitudes starting from loop quantum gravity, and we have obtained the scaling for the endpoints function for the graviton. And also there is a recent result where perturbatively we can obtain from a spin foam model, in particular from the Barrett-Crane model, the area range calculus and with a perfect matching between spin foam models and area range calculus. What is in progress? First of all, the complete full tensorial structure without modified the dynamic, first of all, and then using the new models by Laurent, Fredel, Carlo Rovelli. And then we want to study the next orders to the group field theory coupling lambda to give more dynamics to the model. Another thing that I would like to do is consider instead the opposite limit or the high energy limit. In fact, if when we will have the behavior of the graviton propagator at a small scale, we will compare our result with the other results in literature in dynamical triangulations or in particular in the asymptotic safe gravity, where they obtain a logarithmic behavior of the graviton propagator, and so an effective two dimension, and they have discovered that the effective dimension in their approach is 2 at the height energy and not 4. So there are some citations, and now.
Law from spin forms. Like, I want to understand this statement. Like, can one compute the corrections to the Newton's law to the first?
It is possible in principle, but I think we must introduce the other orders in the group theory couple.
So nobody has done this calculation?
Yeah, Simone has some modification of the graph, but
in 3D, you have done
in 3D,
but not in 4D.
No. Also, we need the full tensorial structure before we can really see the Newton's law.
Yes, it's a priority. So now I want to speak about an application of loop quantum gravity to, and in particular, the application to the problem of black hole singularity. And what I consider is the space-time inside the event horizon. The space-time inside the event horizon is homogeneous, and the metric, the Schwarzschild metric, is of this form. It is familiar, and is a particular element of the class of the Kantowski-Sachs metrics, with topology R time S2, where S2 is the 2 sphere. The curvature invariant is proportional to 1 over b to 6, and the singularity classically is in b equals 0. So the variables in loop quantum gravity are the Hartree variables. And if you impose spherical symmetry and homogeneity, you obtain this form for the connection and for the density triad. And this is the Gauss constraint and the Hamiltonian constraint for a general spherical symmetric homogeneous space-time. But for the Kantowski-Sachs, we can fix the gauge E2 equal E1. And so we have, at the end of the story, an Hamiltonian constraint that is defined over a 4-dimensional phase space, where the variables are A1, and the conjugate momentum are E and E1. The volume of the spatial section is proportional to the square root of E and to E1. What is the relation between metric and Hartree variables? E is equal to B square, and so we must consider what happened in the point E equals 0 to see if the singularity disappears in quantum gravity. And E1 is related to the anisotropy of the Schwarzschild solution, Schwarzschild metric. We can introduce the holonomies for particular graphs, and H1 is the integration, or is the exponential of the integration of the connection along the radial link, and H2 along the theta direction, H3 along the phi direction. We can express the curvature in terms of holonomies, and using the Tiemann's trick, we can express in the Hamiltonian constraint the inverse of the volume operator in terms of the Poisson brackets between the connection and the volume operator for the spatial section. Using all those ingredients, the holonomies and this trick, we arrive to this form of the Hamiltonian constraint in terms of holonomies and the volume operator. Quantum mechanics is the Hilbert space is the L2 Herbart Hilbert space, and the peculiarity is that the bases of the space are normalizable in the Hilbert space itself, and the operator E and E1 are diagonal on the basis mu E, mu E1.
to understand what happened quantum mechanically to the singularity, we must study the point mu e equals zero. So we can study the spectrum of some operator in at the kinematical level, in particular the inverse of the volume operator that we can express in terms of holonomies, and this is the spectrum of over our basis for the Hilbert space of this inverse operator. The result is that this quantity is regular in mu e equals zero, where classically is localized the singularity. This is at the kinematical level. And another operator that we can, this is the plot of the spectrum of before, and it is regular for any value of mu e and mu e1. Another operator that we can consider is the spatial section, and in green, in red, there is the classical quantities that divert at the point mu e equals zero, and in green, here, there is this spectrum for j equal 1/2, and it is regular in mu e equals zero, where classically is localized the singularity.
It goes to zero.
Goes to zero. This spectrum goes to zero. Okay, there are many ambiguities. Okay, now to conclude that the singularity can be solved in this simplified mini superspace model, we must study the dynamics. The dynamics is defined by the Hamiltonian constraint, and we must solve the constraint over a state that is a sum of the basis states with coefficients psi of mu e, mu e1. When we impose the Hamiltonian constraint, we obtain a difference equation, and we can conclude that the singularity can be solved both at the dynamical level, because all the coefficients in this difference equation that are given here are regular in mu e equals zero. Then the interpretation, a possible interpretation of the function psi is the following. It is the wave function of the anisotropy mu e at the time mu e1 at the time mu e, and this is suggested by classical theory. Now I want to speak about the semi-classical analysis of the problem, and so we have this Hamiltonian constraint with the holonomy corrections, but without inverse volume operator correction. And in this gauge, using solving the Hamilton equation of motion for this dynamical model, we can calculate the metric G mu nu. This metric is regular in R equals zero, and there is a plot of the curvature invariant here. In red, there is 1 over R to 6, the classical one. And in green, there is the curvature invariant that we obtain with the holonomy corrections. The metric. The metric is given in these two pictures. The first one represents f of r to minus 1. We have the same classical behavior outside the event horizon, but we have a modification near the Planck scale where we have another inside horizon. The other modification comes from the radius of the S2 sphere. In fact, the S2 sphere now bounces on a small value that is order L Planck and expand again, as represented in this picture. The green solution is the semi-classical solution with the holonomy corrections. The red is the classical one.
Sorry, holonomy correction, not volume correction. So these bouncing effects, they come from the fact that the inverse volume has a discrete spectrum, or not?
that doesn't change.
Doesn't.
No, inverse volume corrections don't play any role.
This is
it's really all on the deltas.
Now I will speak about all the Davis volume operator correction, and you will see that it doesn't change until the Planck scale, and there is a multi-mesh. So I want to give some results from this magic. I want to use this magic to calculate the temperature, entropy, and the evaporation process. Here is given the temperature, and this is the plot of the temperature. In red, there is the opening temperature that goes to infinity for m that goes to zero. And in green, there is the regular temperature calculated with our new solution. The entropy is contained the first term proportional to the area, and the first logarithmic correction, and another logarithmic correction. Calculating the luminosity, and we can study also the evaporation process, and we have that we have an infinite time of evaporation, and it is represented in the green line. I don't know if it is visible, but this gap is not zero. So the evaporation process takes an infinite time. In red, there is the evaporation of the classical. Now, I introduce the correction for the quantum volume from the inverse volume operator. And we have this new equation for the PC in this notation is the radius of the two sphere. So this is the equation for PC in introducing also all the correction in the inverse volume operator spectrum. The yes.
The entropy diverging when the area reaches the Planck area. That logarithm, that second logarithm.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
That's a little bit clearer.
But you can. There is a constant. It's defined. It is defined.
Can you show it again?
Yes.
No, it is not related to this, to the previous slide.
Previous slide. Yeah.
Yeah, the area doesn't go to zero.
No, but when the area
doesn't go to zero in this.
When the area part. Goes to well,
the minimum area is the delta square gamma square. Doesn't go to zero. Doesn't go to zero. There is a minimum area in this. It is written on the.
But plan. Also, but also the third term.
Yes, the third term.
Ah, that is the.
But there is a constant. You must regularize. It's a same class.
No, but also that theorem is fine, no? Because the area is always bigger than the numerator. So that's always.
For large area. Yes.
Ah, for large area. No, for large area, that goes to zero. That.
Okay, so what is the minimal value of the area in terms of gamma and delta square?
Gamma square, delta square.
So what is the
in Planck units?
What is the minimum area?
Gamma square, delta square in Planck units.
No, we're just worried that the second logarithm, the last term,
yes.
The ratio could go to one if the minimal area can be small enough, and then that becomes a logarithm of zero, and then it will go up. But maybe if the numbers are correct, that doesn't happen.
I think the minimum area is such that term will blow up.
Mm.
That is the formula. And I don't understand when you say you have to regularize it further. We all, like, this is the holonomy correction.
Yes.
So I don't see any other correction coming. But either you go beyond the model,
mm-hmm.
or you stay with this.
This is with the holonomy correction. Without.
Yeah, maybe we can discuss later if there's other sources of correction. You can go on.
Okay. Here I have introduced the inverse volume operator spectrum corrections. And it is, this is the plot of this equation, PC dot in terms of PC. The rect trajectory is without correction from the inverse Lorentz operator, and the green trajectory is given by this function. There is another region here that I have plotted here, and this corresponds to another solution that it isn't a black hole. This, when n is bigger than 1 over square root 2 in L Planck units.
What was n in the model?
The black hole mass.
So when m is greater than 1 over root 2, there is no event horizon? Or
inside the horizon. Sorry?
No, you said like there is a, I thought you were saying there is a threshold mass for the black hole to form. Is that what you are saying?
Here is a parameter of the mass. Okay. No, it doesn't lie. When m is smaller than 1 over square root 2, the two parts of the graph touch in a point, and we have just one solution for and not two distinct solutions as in the previous case. So the first solution is for m bigger than 1 over square root 2, and the red is the reduced solution without correction to the inverse volume operator, and the green solution is the solution with all the correction from the inverse volume operator. And so we can believe to the results of the preview section about temperature and evaporation process, because the solutions are the same. There is also another bubble solution, if you want, for the relative to the other part for the equation of motion for PC. But it is not a black hole. For small m, or m smaller than 1 over square root 2, we have that PC doesn't grow again, but goes to zero. And the solution near PC, very close to zero, is a logarithmic solution. And PC is zero when t equals c of n, where this is a function of the mass n. The temperature in this case is reversed in a finite value of the mass. And so we have a sort of hot retina. But this is a work in progress, and we must study problem more carefully. So the conclusions. Okay, at the quantum level, we have shown that kinematically the singularity disappear because some quantities are the inverse volume, the curvature invariant, and other quantities are regular in the inert T1-0, where classically is localized the singularity. At the dynamical level, we have that the constraint gives a different equation for the coefficients of the physical state, and we have a natural evolution beyond the classical singular point. All the coefficients in the difference equation are regular, and we can conclude in this simplified model that the singularity disappears also at the dynamical level. I want to recall the result of semi-classical analysis, and okay. We have obtained a new regular black hole solution using the correction from holonomies. And in the case of large mass, we have a regular temperature and an infinite evaporation time. This part is a not part of the solution, if you want, because the prevision is to have a not remnant, but maybe we can have some gauge invariance problems, and we must study carefully this region. So, there is someone at the time, or
2 minutes.
Ah. Any noise? No, I don't speak about it.
No time for speculation. So.
No. All right.
So in your black hole solution, what happens to B? Like, because you had a lapse which was inversely proportional to sine delta B, if I remember. So what happens to B during the evolution? Because
I have plotted the metric, and in the reason here, the solution, I have in my paper the solution for B.
I think like my worry is that when you have this, when in your curves you have this infinite slope, remember, like you showed these curves, that is where the sine delta b is actually taking the maxima, and it will turn around, become zero, and that is where your lapse will be ill-defined. So have you looked at this, or
no? I think you see that there is a singularity there.
Not singularity
in the sense of space time.
The gauge which you choose.
The coordinate singularity.
No, I'm not saying the coordinate singularity. Where you should expect a resolution of singularity, your gauge will break down.
Or the choice of gauge is not consistent.
Yeah.
Where, in what point?
Where the
sign goes.
Yeah. Because your sign comes in the denominator of the lapse.
Yes. Yes, and it's of the metrics, the regular, so it's a different problem. The entropy, maybe there is something in there.
Yeah, maybe you can discuss this technical point. The entropy,
but however, you cannot believe to the entropy at all order that I written. But I. And the entropy is defined with a constant. So you can.
Afterwards.
Other questions?